Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together. This is Brian O'Sullivan, and I'm here alone today in the studio just to talk to you and catch up, and also to try to process some of my thoughts about my upcoming project. I thought it might be a nice idea. Also, I had a rescheduling situation with a guest, and I ran out of time. You see, I'm going to London tonight to have a week of seeing shows. I'm fortunate enough that I've got a week of time and that I can afford to do it, and I'm super grateful because, I mean, looking at the prices in the West End, not that I'm paying full prices, I'm getting the deals that I can. I don't know how people afford to do it, and I feel that it's wrong, and I wonder who theatre is for. Commercial theatre, it's confusing. That having been said, I'm able and lucky enough to be able to go once in a while, and I'm looking forward to it. It also means that I'm running out of time today, so I couldn't reschedule and have another guest come to the studio. So I thought I'll just chat to you. And there's a lot of change afoot, and I'm in between projects, about to start another one, and it's actually a good time to sit down and kind of have a wee think about how I'm going to approach that. The idea is that when I get on the train tonight, I've sort of set it up in my head that I'm going into writing mode for my new Janice show, which is going to be on next month. So in about just over a month's time, it's going to be the first performance of that. We're going to rehearsals in 2 weeks. Now, I don't mean I'm about to start writing it. In fact, funnily enough, I met with Gary McNair the other day. He's directing it, and what I shared with him was a list of ideas of things that I wanted to add to the script. He didn't realise it was ideas I wanted to add to the script. He thought it was ideas for the script that hadn't yet started. And when he told me this later, he said that he hadn't even been concerned about that fact, which I found quite comforting. He said, I thought that we were 3 weeks away and that was where you were, and I was just assuming you were going to go and weave that into something, and there we'd be. But as it happens, there is a script already. I wrote it before the previous show, and then because of timing, we ended up getting a slot in the venue at Christmas time. So I was left with the decision whether to make, to mould what I had into more of a Christmassy vibe, or to put it in a drawer for later and write another show for Christmas. And I went with the latter, which left me with a script in the drawer, which essentially was the first one I wrote. So it's interesting because going back now to that script, I'm going back to something I wrote and haven't tried out publicly. Whereas the second one I wrote and performed in quite short order, and Gary and I worked on a lot of the details of it together. You know, a lot of what you see on the stage is our work, not mine. So now I have the benefit of the experience of all that, and I'm going back and looking at this other script, which I can now see through those eyes. So I'm looking at it, and first of all, the good news, and this is good news for me, is it's too long. And too long is good for me, because my greatest fear in writing has always been not having enough material for some reason. So I looked at it for the first time in months the other day and discovered that it was about 1.5 times as long as it needs to be, which is great. Along with the list, and you would laugh if you saw this list. It's just 5 or 6 little sentences or phrases to remind me of things I want to put in. It doesn't look like anything, but I know that in my head that it's actually a lot of material and a lot of stuff that I really want to tap into. So between the script that's too long and the list of solid ideas that I want to try, I don't feel we're short on material. And that allays one of my greatest fears, like I told you. So it remains now to edit and also to rewrite and to write new bits. But when I'm writing new bits, what I do is I record my voice on my phone and I just go into character and talk. And then I listen back and I type out exactly what I said. And then I go and I edit. So a lot of what's in the first script is the exact transcript of what I said in those voice notes, which is why it's too long, because those voice notes are always the first and only take, and I'm rambling around some ideas. So everything is in there. So each section needs to be cut down to the essentials. And then new sections added, like I say. It's a cool process. It's a joyous writing process, unlike any other. Any other time I write, I find it so difficult. I constantly doubt myself. I don't think I can actually do it. I think I get away with it. You know the kind of stuff. You know yourself, the feelings. With this stuff, I go about it differently, and somehow it just comes. I just believe in it. It may be because the way that these characters emerged was from me largely improvising, and I've had a lot of positive feedback about them because they're online comedy characters, so you get instant feedback. And that can be good and bad. People will tell you, ah, nah, that's shite. or they'll say, I prefer the other one, or I prefer the other character, or you should do more of this and less of that. But of course, you get a lot of people saying, "You know, oh, great, really funny, whatever." So it's instant feedback, and then when you do more, you can choose to play into that. I mean, you don't want to play against your reviews or whatever, but you can certainly take on board what people have said and say, "Okay, well, they really like when Janice is in the surgery, for example." So I always know that if I do a surgery video, it's going to do better than the others. But I don't then do all surgery videos, because that world just, for me, just gets smaller and smaller. And there's an element of realism that I like in the surgery that will disappear if I have to keep coming up with new things that people are phoning about, because it'll get more and more absurd and less real. So that's why I don't just do surgery videos for some... Those are some of the reasons. Anyway, what am I saying? It's so going with having the feedback of the audience so close and instantaneous means that these characters are sort of alive and breathing, and that they they thrive on being improvised around. They almost speak for themselves. In a weird way, I don't have to put words in their mouths. I know I'm speaking about characters that I'm playing that are clearly me. But if we can all sort of suspend our disbelief for a second, I find it sort of quite easy to talk about these people as if they're not me, which is funny, I suppose. But yeah, they do kind of write themselves. So that's why the voice note thing seems to work, because rather than me as Brian sitting down and typing, in the mode of writer, I'm going to write things for these other people to say, I find it much more organic to sort of be the person, speak as them, and see what they say. And to some people that might sound like jargon, or like kind of type of talk that you get out of theatre folk that's a lot of rubbish, basically. And it really isn't. I know I can see why it might sound like that. I let the characters speak and they come forth and all the rest of it. But they kind of do. Perhaps because they're sort of archetypal, or because, you know, they speak to truth that's kind of quite broad in our society, maybe. One way of putting it is Janice is kind of like everybody's mum or everybody's auntie. So she can say things that any number of aunties or mums might say. She's an amalgam, in a sense, of the mums of Scotland. So her voice is so much in our consciousness already, because we've grown up with it, many of us, and I have, that when I go into the mode of her, stuff does come out. But then it goes the other way, in that people now comment on how much I'm like Janice or Frank in my day-to-day life, and that's happened since I've done these characters. Not that so much that I've changed, but that I've allowed myself to express myself in an uncle or an auntie type of a way. Do you know? I don't know if you know what I mean. Maybe it's about getting a little bit older as well. I'm kind of, you know, I've got some of the curmudgeonliness of Frank and some of the kind of, can you call it the maternal instinct, the sort of caring instinct of a Janice, where, you know, I like a bit of gossip, but ultimately I want everybody to be okay. And I don't know. I don't find it confusing, but I do find it, I don't know even what the word is. It's fascinating to me, actually, that the sort of blurred lines between reality and fiction with these characters, and how they speak for themselves and yet they allow me to speak truths that I think are important. What I love is that I can adjust, so I could easily make Frank, racist or bigoted. I've said it before, I'm sure. But I don't have to, so I don't. And I can use that character as kind of a mouthpiece to say good stuff. But we can still highlight through these characters how that generation, people in, say, their 50s and 60s right now, might struggle with the changes that are happening around them and struggle to understand them fully. But let's imagine that we've got these two people who want to understand the changes and who want the best for everyone, even if they find the world confusing and daunting. That's interesting to me, and it's a beautiful thing to me because, like I say, it's so easy to just write old people who, you know, hark back to the good old days and think everything modern is just a lot of rubbish. That's easy done, and, you know, not necessary. And it's been done. It's been done many, many times. So there you go. So the plan is to get on the train and go into writer mode, like I say. I won't be doing voice notes in the quiet coach, but I'm going to open the script and I'm going to start to rearrange some of it. Story arc is really important. It would be easy to avoid that as well and just do skits. But I think one of the things that gives people a meaningful experience, as well as having a bit of a laugh, is a story arc. A narrative that they can follow that has some sort of payoff at the end, so that they can go on an emotional journey. Again, I'm in danger of talking it up, you know, or trying to make it sound super sophisticated when maybe you think it's not or whatever. But all I'm saying is, if it was me in an audience, I'd love to go and have a laugh at these characters, but I definitely would love even more to get to the end of the show and feel like I've been on an emotional journey with them, that we started somewhere and we ended somewhere slightly different, that they maybe have learned something or been through something. There might be a catharsis or a sort of gestalt in that, you know, this experience going from start to finish and it being a complete thing somehow. So the story arc, the emotional journey, is very important, and I think I'd be fairly safe to say that it's not very there in the current version of the script, because it is lots of building blocks at the moment. So that's the job, isn't it, is to go through it and find what works, find what doesn't, in terms of a greater arc, you know, because sometimes things are funny and clever, but they don't serve the play. And it is a play. And thinking of it as such helps me as well, because I can kind of allow the story and the emotional journey to be at the top of the list of priorities. Otherwise, I can let myself away with anything. I can just say, oh, it's funny, it doesn't matter. Throw a song in here or whatever. Having said all that, you know, if the story arc is clear and I'm happy with it, I can do all sorts in between those moments or in the middle of it. I could throw in songs or do whatever. But I feel that you can earn those things in a really clear way if the rest of the piece is in place and is all the elements of it are doing their work, are pulling their weight. For example, there's a bit in the first show called Barber Billy, and it's about this character that Frank knows. He's a barber, and he's called Billy. And I had it in from the start, and it didn't... What we discovered early on was that it didn't really do much for Frank's storyline. You know, it was fun and all the rest of it, but it was a kind of a sticking point between me and Gary to say... It was every day we'd come into rehearsal and say, okay, what about Barber Billy? What are we going to do about Barber Billy? Because, Gary was asking me to justify its existence, and I was fighting for it, you know, and I think there was a part of him that wanted to cut it or cut it down. And it was one, there's always kind of one at least where you constantly sort of thrash it back and forth and you battle with it a wee bit. And at some point you reach a resolution. Either you cut it or you change it or you find a way to make it work as it is. And what we did was discover, well, it's hard to pinpoint, but what we ultimately did was look for ways that the Barbara Billy section helps us learn more about Frank and pushes the story forward. And sometimes it can be as simple as a couple of lines. I mean, to be really crude about it in terms of an example, but we had to start the Barbara Billy section by saying, "I got a Christmas card from Barbara Billy." And that, I know it sounds so naff, but instantly, at least what that does is it places, there's a reason that Barbara Billy's been mentioned in the first place. And then Frank can go off on a bit of a tangent and tell us about Barbara Billy, and it's that's okay. We just have to watch he doesn't go too far before circling back and coming in and reminding us that this is all about the fact that he sent us a Christmas card and back to the story. So what I've discovered with Gary's help is that we can actually say just about anything if it's a slight diversion from the story, as long as we don't divert too far or for too long. We need to look back and remind ourselves where we are and where we came from, and we can jump out and dip our toes in other places as long as we return at some stage and we keep on track. And the audience, definitely, if they don't know it explicitly, they feel it, because they enjoy those little deviations, and then they're comforted, I think, by returning from them to the story, and they come back to, "Oh, what was it we were talking about again?" And we continue with the through line. It's pleasing. Narrative is emotionally and, you know, artistically satisfying for an audience. These aren't things that an audience thinks about, but these are things that we think about when we're making something for an audience, in my opinion. And that's also true of improvisation. You know, it's absolutely fine for me to go off on a tangent at any point. The key, one of the keys, is to remember where I left off and what took me there so that I can come back to it. Ideally without dropping the ball or losing the momentum. And the other thing with improvisation, of course, a separate point, is there's the wee art of feeling out how long to keep it going for, because the temptation is to keep going and going. You get sucked in. If there's laughs, keep going until you can kill it dead. And the other way of doing it, of course, is to do just enough but not too much and come back. And that's, I find that so difficult. It's particularly if you're on stage with someone else and they ad lib, and the decision whether or not to join in to add anything to that is a tricky one, because, you know, instinctively my ego wants to join in, but I've done it sometimes and said the thing and realised, no, I've actually lessened what we had by adding to it. It was enough. That's a tricky one. And the same really goes for when you're on stage on your own. It's just that you're both voices. And the question is, when do you stop adding? It's all about timing, isn't it? And that's not teachable. It's just, it is, I think it's learnable, but it's hard to put into words to someone else. And I suppose that's what I'm trying to say. So this show, we've got Gary directing, me performing, and we've also got the amazing Cole Stewart as producer or production manager and all the other titles that you could throw on him, which means that for this production, we can focus on just the script and doing the show, and Cole kind of deals with everything else, which is amazing. I can see why people have teams of people doing stuff. We've also got design by the amazing Kenny Miller, and I just had a meeting with Kenny the other day to look at the model box. I'm really excited about the design, and just the fact that we have that. Again, it means that That's not something that I'm trying to figure out. I'm getting someone who's an expert at that to do their thing. And I do love that. You know, I've talked about it many times on this show, the idea that all the different disciplines in our business are so important and so diverse, and the idea that we need the experts to do their thing rather than us trying to be a jack of all trades, which to a point sometimes you have to do. You know, we're doing a certain amount of cobbling things together and making it up as we go along, but there's such a call for the people who are really good at this, that very specific thing, being hired to do that thing and letting them do it, you know. Which is why I love being in a bigger production, because I get to see everyone doing their thing. A lighting designer whose sole job is to decide where the light comes from and where it goes and what it looks like. And that person is completely expert and is doing things I could never even hope to understand. And I just love it. I love realizing that I don't even have a clue what they're doing or how they're doing it, but I see the results of it and I'm impressed, you know. It's a tremendous thing. So yes, that is all to say that we have a certain amount of, you know, expertise at our disposal, and then the rest of it we are going to have to muddle through and make up as we go along. I mean, Cole has never done this before, and knowing that, I said to him, look, if you're free for a few weeks here, do you fancy doing this? And I think it'll be great for all of us, and I think you'll be great at it. And then just trusting him and just handing it to him, knowing that he's a great communicator, and an organised person and driven. And I just said, you know, go and get us as many venues as you can, and you talk to them so I don't have to, and arrange everything. And it's working great. It's working great. And I know one of the great things about actors is that they're driven and will do, you know, will make things work. People in the creative industries, I should say more broadly, will make things happen, because often if we don't make things happen, they don't happen, you know? So it's kind of like me, where if I want to do something, I can't really afford to wait around for someone to offer it to me. I have to just get on and do it, which is why we're doing the shows the way we are. Same with this podcast, just going, right, I fancy doing that, let's do it. Let's not wait for it to happen or ask someone else for permission. Let's just do it and hope for the best. And of course, many people have done this before in theatre, and what comes out of it often is suffering and low pay. And I'm really well aware of that, because I've been at the receiving end of it. You know, let's just make it happen. Everyone work too many hours and not be properly compensated, and you know, be in a bad environment. And that's the other side of the coin, which I don't want to happen. So it's always been my priority with this show that we're talking about to make sure that everyone, before anything happens, everyone gets paid properly. And then the rest we'll figure out. Which means that the risk lies with me. Like, no one else is taking a risk to do this show. They're all going to get paid. And if I have to pay them out of my pocket, I will. But I suspect I won't. I really hope I won't. And now is the time for me to mention that you can buy tickets, and I really would love you to. You'd be supporting this venture, which is completely unfunded. It's not supported by anyone else. It's not sponsored. It just relies on punters buying tickets to have a good night out, and then the people who gave you that good night out get paid for their work. And it's kind of, everybody wins. You get to experience a comedy show, which has also got a bit of heart to it. It's a play, but it's not an intimidating theatre experience. It's not highfalutin, it's not Shakespeare. You'll understand exactly what's going on, and you'll have a good time, and it's open to everybody. Yeah, and you'll be supporting artists at grassroots making stuff happen. So yeah, it's win-win. We are playing the McRobert Arts Centre in Stirling. We're playing at Greenock Beacon Arts Centre, Falkirk Town Hall, and we're finishing our run at Glasgow's Oranmore for 3 nights. The tickets for all of these are available on my social media. If you follow me, just go to my bio, you'll see my link tree. But if you don't, then please do. Follow me at Brido Hingwe on all platforms, BRIDOHINGWY, Brido Hingwe. And the links to all the tickets are in my bio. If you need that link right now, it's linktree.com/BridoHingwe, which is in fact linktr.ee/BridoHingwe. Linktree.com/BridoHingwe. And you can get tickets on all the venues' websites, but I've made it easy there for you to click straight through to each ticket page in turn. So that's Stirling, Greenock, Falkirk, and Glasgow. Tickets are about £15. They differ slightly between venues depending on their service charges, things like that, but they're set at about £15. And I'll be there, of course I'll be there on the night, and I'd love to meet you. I'll be there to meet everybody and have a chat, and we'll have a lovely evening. So yes, please do buy tickets. It would be great to see you there. And if you need any more information or you want to chat to me about it or anything like that, just drop me a line on social media, or you can get me here, brian@puttingittogethercast.com. Love to hear from you, always do. And thanks to the people who write in, and also to the people who support the show in many ways, by retweeting us, by adding to Instagram stories, talking about us on social media, and by chipping in a couple of quid when you can, which you can do at puttingittogethercast.com, and just click on donate. There's no slash, it's on the front page, puttingittogethercast.com, click on donate, and you can give us a quid, you can give us a quid a month, you can give us more, and whatever you can afford is very much appreciated to keep this show going. That sounds like a lot of asking for your money there, but I hope that you'll come along to the show because you'll have a great experience, you'll have a laugh, and I think that's worth it for me, that's worth the price of a ticket. So, I hope that you're well. I hope that you're not melting. I know I'm going to London where there's a further heat wave in progress. It's going to be very hot over the weekend. I'm hoping all these theatres have got aircon. I suspect not all of them do. But I'm going to pack all my shorts, and I have this weird thing, like I'm getting on a train and I'm going, same when I fly, I want all the devices to be charged to 100% just in case I need them. iPad, laptop, phone, watch, all need to be charged up. And of course I leave it until a couple of hours before I leave to start thinking about that. And I've also lost a charger recently, so I've only one charger between the laptop and the iPad. Anyway, blah blah blah, first world problems. Because I think, oh, that's four and a half hours on the train. I might, at one point I might want to write, sometimes I might want to read, maybe I should charge the Kindle, sometimes I might want to watch something on telly, so that would be the iPad, and on it goes. And the reality is I'll probably get on the train, listen to some songs on the phone and fall asleep. But I want to be ready because you never know. So at the moment, everything's charging. And then, of course, I realise, oh yeah, I've got a podcast to do as well. That's right. It's not the first time I've considered saying I'm going to take a week off. And I will one day. I mean, I did take a break during the pandemic. But one of these odd days, I might just suddenly say I'm taking a week off. But I hate to break up a collection if I can avoid it. And it's been so helpful for me to start to talk a wee bit about the show and how that's going to work. I tell you what I'm really excited about is getting in the room with Gary, because we just work together. It just works. And neither of us are very interested in the idea that more hours equals more work, you know, or longer hours equals more work. We just let it dictate itself, see how it feels. We'll meet at the agreed time, but the first half an hour will probably just be coffee and catching up and settling, and then we might do a bit, and then if it's sunny we might sit outside for an hour. But we're always talking about the show, and if we're not, we're talking about stuff that makes us laugh, and we're always, you know, 99% of the time we're trying to make something that's funny. In fact, all the time we're trying to make something that's funny, but sometimes there are moments in it that aren't supposed to be funny, but you know what I mean. So talking about stuff that makes us laugh is just, for me, is as much part of the process as any. It might get jotted down, it might not, but it all feeds in. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to that, and it's going to be a fun, light-hearted, enjoyable process. And, you know, Gary is directing the show in as much as that's the closest title that we can come up with. But I don't know. For me, it's it's more symbiotic than director, performer. And it's also more complex because it's director, co-writer with writer, performer, you know, job titles, whatever. I'm the guy that's going to go up and do the thing, and he's the guy that's going to watch and, you know, make the suggestions, I suppose. But it's just a dialogue. It's just a conversation. There's no power dynamic or anything that affects it in any way. But it's great because, you know, you need someone else, I think, to look from the outside and say, you know, you could do more of that. That's really good. Or you should do less of that. That's not working. Barbara Billy is a perfect example. But we made it work in the end. So, yeah, it's just... that's the bit that I'm most excited about. Well, second only to actually getting on stage in front of an audience and sharing this stuff and having fun. Because that's ultimately what it's all about. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that. But and now we have Cole on the team, which will be a different dynamic to add to it. It'll make it even better because, you know, there'll be so many elements of it that we won't have to immediately deal with because Cole's got so much of it under control. Cole is under control. It's so good. So good. So, I guess the plan is, well, I know the plan is to deliver some sort of draft to Gary after this trip to London. I'll be away for nearly a week, and on my way back or at some point I'll send him a draft of what I've got, and then we'll have a chat, and we have next week to do that, and for me to do any rewrites that might need done, that will need done, let's be honest. So yeah, there's a draft that's sitting there just now that's very much just a kind of a zero draft that I threw down a year ago. And then there'll be a second draft by the end of this week and a third sometime during next week, and we'll call that the rehearsal draft, and then it'll change. I mean, it'll change wildly in the room, and that's another lesson I've learned is I can't afford to be precious. I don't think I ever was with this stuff, but it would be easy to be, you know, this is my thing and I've got an idea of how it's going to work and stuff. It's so much better to just go into a room and go, this is a bunch of stuff and let's see, you know. For me, I often find when I work with people on developments and things is one of the senses I get is, could we start differently? It's just maybe personal taste or it's the way I write, but I look at things and I think, is this actually where we want to enter this story? Could we cut these first two pages and just jump in here, and then could we add that stuff in another way, or we just cut it completely? Somehow, the start is something that ends up changing, or that I like to discuss, that maybe I don't often get right in the first instance. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. I don't know. So I'm open to all that, and I think we need to be. And then, well, the end. I mean, all the bits, but you know, those structural bits are so important. How do you start, and what's the journey, and where does it end? Because we might find that it doesn't end in the right place, that it needs to end, you know, sooner. We need to know more about this, less about the other thing. I don't know. I really don't know. But then there are things that I think are taken from more traditional setups where, for example, regardless of what we've got, I kind of need to end with a song. I've decided. And that's not an emotional story arc point. It is an emotional point, but it's not a story arc point. It's just a good sense structure, you know, good night out type point. And I think in a way those two arguments are kind of could be separated. You know, one is a discussion about the emotional life of the characters, and the other is a discussion about the experience of an audience and what best, you know, what they will best respond to. So I don't know if that's making sense, or if it goes, maybe it flies in the face of all that's ever been written about structure, or I don't know. I'm not any expert, but I like talking about it. And then I find it bizarre that there are people listening to this. Sometimes I just go, oh, I don't know, it's weird. People come up to me, oh, I heard your chat about this, that, and the next thing. That was good, die. I suppose if they thought it wasn't good, they wouldn't come up to me. But thanks for listening to it. I'm going to leave you there because I'm going to rush off and get this train. Sorry it's a wee bit shorter this week, but that's what's in my head. And next week we'll be back to regular programming with a guest, I can only assume. And in the meantime, make sure you give us a wee follow on social media, PetCC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And remember, get your tickets now for AHA 2022. Get all the information you need on my social media, Brido Hingwy, BRIDOHINGWY, Brido Hingwy, on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. And the four tour dates that we have so far, and there may well be more appearing, they are Stirling, Greenock, Falkirk, and Glasgow, and they're all in September, which is next month, just a few weeks away. So get to Brido Hingwy on all those social media channels, or just go to linktree.com/Brido Hingwy to check out all those dates and get your tickets, get them booked, support arts. Arts from the grassroots, where no corporations are making big money off us. We're not getting ripped off. We're just supporting the people that made the thing, and we're having a good night out. That's what I'm up for, and I'm up for everybody coming along. Everybody is welcome, and I want as many people to be there and enjoy it as possible. So please come along and join us. And thanks very much for listening to this episode. Stay safe. Watch you don't get too hot. Drink plenty of water. Breathe deeply. Look after yourself. Cheerio now.